the Mental Health Hotline. If you are up, it's time for you to start your radio.
Inch by inch, row by row, and elopement makes your garden grow. All it takes is organic know-how to make some fertile ground. Inch by inch, box by box, and elopement makes your garden rock. With Invisible Gardener Radio Talk and Organic, it's organic.
Hello, everybody. This is Andy Lopez, better known as the Invisible Gardener. Today on Don't Panic, It's Organic, we're going to be doing Japanese beetles. There's a whole bunch of questions I've been getting. So we're going to do Japanese beetles. We're going to do sooty mold. That's sooty mold. And then we're going to do how to determine if your soil is toxic after a fire. Because, you know, there's lots of places that have been burned down lately, as the engineer well knows, and same thing with Malibu. And so people have been asking me about, you know, what kind of test can I do to determine if the soil is toxic or not? So that's one of the questions I'm going to be answering. And then there's a new question just came in through the because people go up to the website and they leave a question in the comment section. And so there's a new one, and it's actually from an old friend of mine. We've known each other for many years. I actually met him. I believe I met Jim at the Nitron Industry organic conference they were having, and I think it was in some part of the 70s, 78. No, I got married in 79. And so it was probably in the early 80s. Maybe it was 80, 81, 82, 83. No, wait a sec. I got it now. I came to Malibu in 84. And so in 84 was when I started going out and doing the talk. So somewhere by maybe 85, 86, 87, 88, one of those years I did a lot of traveling, and Nitron did a conference every year. Jim will probably tell me if he's listening. And so you can always call me and talk to me. I'm happy to go over with you on the air what you need to know, you know. And so if you want to call, you know, we use Skype here. So it would be BBS Radio PR. That's the Skype call and number you call to get directly here to this on the air with me. You can also call with using the regular phone, or it's your cell phone, which is 888-627-6008. I'm hearing all kinds of things here. You can also use the direct line, which is 323-744-4831. And let me see. I think we're good here, right? Okay. The chat lines are gone. No. Am I still on? I guess I am, because we were chatting, but we're not chatting anymore. So, okay. It says chats, but I don't see a chat coming up for me. So, before I start, I want to talk a little bit about, this is the last week of the month. Let me see if I finish this. So you know that you want to, you can also email me, right? AndyLopez@InvisibleGardener.com. You can also go to InvisibleGardener.com and you can click on the inquiry button. You can leave a question there. Or you can also do what a lot of other people do too, is it's just, when I do a column in the blog section, and sometimes it's related to what I'm talking here. Some of these things I may end up writing a column about it. Where I wrote back to the, I already answered the questions people ask me, but I also email them back if they email me, but I also will usually use it as a basis to write my next column on. So I'm going to do one of the Japanese beetle and this other questions here that we have. And then usually you can leave a comment in reference to that particular, you know, article. So if you have a Japanese beetle question and I write the Japanese beetle column, of course. But even then, you can always just go up there and on the blog, and even the latest blog, you can type in, I listen to your show. I don't know if I'm going to do a special blog for the show, you know. So that way you can, but basically, you can communicate with me in any number of ways. And also, too, if you're getting the newsletter, one of the best ways to communicate with me, because it's real easy to enter the contest. You just click on enter me in the contest. You get a pop-up form, which is for the email. Basically, it's filled out for you. Andy, I'd like to join the contest. If you have a question, you enter it in there, and I can also answer it that way. And we have a contest drawing once a month. This is the last day of the last Saturday of the month for June's contest. And in June's contest, the winner will win the latest version of my book, Don't Panic, It's Organic, the print version. And then they also get a lifetime membership in the club. And I'm going to be throwing in the Organic Grower's Kit, which is basically 5 pounds of the Invisible Gardener's Special Rock Dust Blend and a quart of the Super Seaweed. It's a microbiological activator. So you'll get that, which normally is $150 for the quart, $50, so it's like $200 deal right there. Plus you get the book, which is a $20 book, the black and white version of it. Every once in a while, I'll give away the color version of it. The color version is a $100 book. And then when you get the color version, you also get the black and white version, because I'm just not going to let you use the color version and destroy it. So you can read the black and white version and leave the color version alone so it doesn't get destroyed. So if you have a question, you can call me, email me, any of those ways you want to communicate with me, and I'm happy to answer your questions and help you out in any way that I can. So let's see. And right after the show here, I also have my latest my cosmic spaceship, which should be coming up right after the show here. Okay, and then we can... I do a lot of different things on that show, but mainly I write my own music, and you guys get to listen to it, be the first to listen to it. So let me talk to you a little bit about, let's see which ones are, okay, you're right. So the Japanese beetles. Now, here's this thing that I try to explain all the time to people, okay? I gotta sit closer. Move over here. Closer. Okay. So here's a thing that I try to explain to people. So they need to understand, because it's my approach is not the same as most other people, in the sense that kill the beetle, right? Okay. So that's the basic approach. What can we do to kill the beetle? And lots of things. There are lots and lots of things you can use that will, of course, effectively kill the beetle. In my opinion, it doesn't solve the problem. It's like the ad on TV, eat all you want to, you have heartburn or this or that, just take this pill. You may think you want, okay, so you killed that beetle. Then you'll be told you have to do it on a regular basis, because it's not just this beetle. You're going to have to kill every beetle that comes around there and forever. As long as that, you know, that's the problem is still there, the beetle will still come. You think the beetle is the problem. The beetle is not the problem. My thinking is, why is the beetle coming after that tree or that plant? Because Japanese beetles will go after a wide range of plants. You know, they're attracted to many different types of plant material. Not just, the person didn't tell me what type of particular type of plant they had, you know. whether it's fruit trees. But it goes over, according to the little thing I got off of Google, it's 300 different plant species are attacked by the Japanese beetles, including turf, fruit trees, and ornamentals. So here's what I learned over the years about why the beetle attacks all these wide variety of plants. Okay, this is what I learned. So I talk a lot about Brix. Brix is a measurement of sugar in a plant. And usually it's the juice. You usually measure the juice of the plant or the sap of the plant to determine the Brix level. The juice is going to be different. So if you have orange juice, whatever type of juice you have, whether including wine and beer, those things are used to measure the sugar level of the juice. So you can also measure the actual sap level of the tree or plant, which will give you a different reading. So in other words, if you have a citrus, to say an orange tree, and that you measure the juice of the orange tree, it's going to be a different reading, Brix reading, than if you measure the leaf of the orange tree or the flower of the orange tree. Because you can measure the leaf and you can measure the flower. It's a little bit different than measuring the juice, because the juice is already in a juice form. You just squeeze it onto the refractometer and you get your reading. If you're measuring the leaf or the flower, you have to put it into a motor and crush it. Add a tiny little bit of distilled water to it until you get the green chlorophyll, you get the liquid, the green chlorophyll in, and you put that on a refractometer. And that'll give you a reading. And on top of that, if you measure, you're supposed to get the same reading regardless of what part of the tree you read it. But quite often you'll get different readings. That's a name for that. I'm not exactly sure it is now, but it basically means that the plant is not distributing the nutrients and the minerals evenly across the plant, because that's what you're supposed to do. It's supposed to get the same food everywhere in different proportions and so forth, depending upon what function that part of the plant is. But basically a leaf in one part and a leaf in another place should have the same Brix level and the same mineral levels. And so the flowers have also mineral levels as well too. And so the flowers have their own. You take a flower and you crush it with a motor. A few drops of distilled water will give you a clearish, cloudish liquid that you put on the refractometer, and that gives you a Brix reading as well. The Brix readings also varies throughout the year, because it's really an indicator of how well the tree is recycling and doing its thing and spreading the nutrients and the wealth around the plant, how well it's functioning. And that gives you an indicator as to what's going on. And usually, and in my experience has been, that throughout the years, millions of years, okay, insects have evolved to know when that tree is not functioning right. See, just like a wolf would know when they six sheep. Or any other predator would know, I'm going to go after that one instead of that one. And so there are lots of indicators. So in terms of trees and plants, these are the things that they have evolved to see. So in essence, the Japanese beetle has a built-in refractometer. And in a way it does, because the eye structure is very different than our eye structure. The refractometer, what the refractometer does is it refracts. It takes the light and it bends it out into different elements and different. That's how you can tell if scientists can look at it as a star or a planet and tell you what it's made of. It's a different kind of refractometer, but it's the very same thing. Calcium and iron and magnesium and all these things have a certain color that they give off. So the bug has evolved over the years to say, if that plant looks like this, then bingo, I am going to go there and I'm going to have my food and I'm going to lay my eggs. It's usually the case. And you name the bug, whether it be the Japanese beetle, the shadhor borer, the bark beetle, you name them, there are endless number of them, and they all have evolved differently to treat with a specific plant, right? And so the Brix level It's just a it's just our way of determining how healthy the plant is. The bugs don't even know what a refractometer lifts, let alone a bricks, but the results are the same. They can determine the health of a plant. And what in my studies over the years, right, I would say, well, gee, what is it that makes a plant have such a high bricks level other than the fact that we say it's healthy? Okay, so what is it that makes that plant so healthy, right? Why? What does health mean to us, to humans? How does being a human, healthy human, what does that mean? To me, it means that everything is functioning in my body. I'm getting the trace minerals and everything I need. It's functioning. There's nobody is deficient of supplies to build what I need in my body. The same thing with the tree or plant. Everything is functioning. They're getting all the minerals that they need and all the resources that they need to grow and produce. If any one of those sources are missing, they can't function. They can't produce what they need to do to grow, to be healthy. And what makes a difference there, one between a healthy tree and an unhealthy tree, other than the fact that it's not getting the trace metals? How has that evolved over the millions of years that the ants, ants is a perfect example of this situation here too, because ants do not themselves attack a plant. I've never seen an ant digging a drilling into a plant, taking the sap out. What they do is they get other creatures to do that, whether it be aphids, whether it be mealy bugs. I'm doing a show. My latest TV show is out, and it's called Sooty Mode, Invisible Gardener TV. Sooty Mode, Sooty, S-O-T-T-Y, Mode. I thought that was one of the things that I was going to talk about today. I'm not sure. I got my little list. Yeah, Sooty Mode. And so the ants heard aphids and mealybugs and whitefly for their nectar. They're the ones, the mealybugs and the aphids, that attacked the trees. They sucked the juice out of the tree, the blood out of the tree, and they convert it into a nectar, which then the ants milk it like a cow. Ants have two stomachs, one that they eat for them to eat, and the other one to take back to the colony. And the nectar is what they produce, the variety of different food sources for the different, whether it be the queen, the worker, whatever. Okay, and that's how they get their food. And so the ants, too, have evolved. All the insects, it's not coincidence, they've been doing this millions of years, okay? After a while, you get to be very good at it. And so it comes back down to there's always a short-term and long-term solution. The short-term solution is how do we deal with the immediate problem? How do we, what do we do, for example, for the Japanese beetle? What can we do for the Japanese beetle to stop that damage now, right? And at the same time, what can we do to, make it permanently solve the damage, or as best as we can, right? What can we do permanently try to solve the damage as best as we can? So, in terms of the Japanese beetle, right, there's a bunch of different things on the market that are organic that can be used. They're totally safe. They will tend to either kill the beetle on contact or prevent its growth or its stage, one of its stages, And if it can't go through all the stages, it won't, it usually starts off as like a nematode. It's like it's not, there's two faces of the Japanese beetle, a grub, okay? So it starts off as a grub, and then it evolves into the actual beetle, okay? It grows into the beetle. So what you can use there, when it's in, so you if you stop it from the grub stage, which is one of the easiest ways to control it with, and remember, the reason why this Japanese beetle can survive in the soil is because the soil is not functioning properly. See, the soil determines whether or not a Japanese beetle or any other type of grub will survive in there because of the natural bacteria and the natural microbes that's in that soil. If those microbes or those bacteria are not there, that's when the grub becomes present. One of the tests that I do lab tests, and one of the tests I do is it determines the health of the soil. So what is the so there are many things that determine the health of the soil. One of the things that is important to look for, one of the things I do first is I look for a pH level, right? So the pH level tells me many things right off the bat when I go look at it, you know, when I have the lab report come back and it tells me the pH level. I don't really need to look at anything else except I, using the pH level, I would say, okay, let's see. So let's just take an example of a pH of 7, well, I was going to say 8, but that's way too high. Let's just say 7.5. So let's just say your pH level is at 7.5. Okay? So right off the bat, it would tell me, well, all the good guys are probably dead. You probably have nothing but bad guys there, because I tell people that the good guys and the bad guys don't live in the same place. And so the good guys are the beneficial microbes that you want. Okay? Those are the good guys. And the bad guys are not the beneficial microbes. They are the diseases. I tell people diseases start in the soil. The only reason why they start in the soil, I mean, they're there already, but if the beneficial microbes are there, they're not, then that controls them. That keeps them locked into the soil. As soon as the beneficial microbes die off, the conditions are right for these types of microbes to take advantage of it. So I would say right off the bat, well, pH is wrong. So, you know, and most people, when they ask me a question, like, for example, this person asked me about the Japanese beetle, has no idea what level the pH is at. And she asked me about what type of soil test, lab test, you know, you would do. And, you know, there are several ones that I would do just to, because the lab test, people like lab tests, okay? So when they get something back from the lab report, and if it says, lady, there's nothing alive here, or you have this, because that goes back to, you know, how can you determine if your soil is toxic or not? If your soil is so toxic, it kills off all the microbes, it's toxic. Let me put it in a different way. If all the microbes on your soil are dead, it's toxic. Okay, so there are several tests that I do, the basic biology test, which tells me how much active bacteria and how much active fungi you have. I also do an advanced biology test, which covers it a little bit further to see what type of beneficial nematodes you have or what type of protozoan you have. I also do a mycorrhiza colonization test to see what your mycorrhiza content is, because that's part of the living microbes that you need. And then I also recommend a soil chemistry test, which basically tells you the pH, tells you what soluble salts you have, you know, what type, your percentage of organic matter, whether you have a phosphorus, what's your phosphorus level, your potassium. Usually covers a wide variety of trace metals, doesn't cover all of them, cover calcium, magnesium, sodium, zinc, iron, manganese, copper, boron, covers the nitrogen that's available in the soil. Then I also do the plant availability nutrition package, which covers a wider depth of what type of copper you have, what sources of boron you have, what type of sulfates you have, what soluble salts. It covers more details on the humus levels. And of course, I do a variety of other tests for looking for diseases. But if you were to do the basic biology test and the soil chemistry test, and it comes back with low microbe level or none, then you know you have a problem. That happens exactly with a person I went out to not too long ago. She has these beautiful, oak trees. One has already died. It's been cut and gone, right? And the one in the back has all the symptoms of being having a disease. So I did a lab test and came back as Phytophthora. That's a deadly disease. It will kill the tree. If it was there by itself, I would tell the lady, well, it depends. Usually, it depends on what stage it's in already. Usually, we can reduce the damage. It'll kill it, but not right away. Maybe we change the environment, bring the soil back to life, reduce the water. There's a good chance that the tree will survive for a long time. But if you keep doing the same thing you're doing before, which was overwatering, which destroys the soil, and then of course it wasn't getting the nutrients it needed, and the pytrop is a soil disease which then attacks the tree, and it gets spread to other trees. So it comes down to the key to the oak tree control of the Phytophthora, the key to the beetle control, the Japanese beetle control, the key to the key to the sooty mold, right? The key to determining if your soil is toxic or not is the microbial population level. If you have a high microbial population level, then I would say, hey, everything's good. If you have the lower the microbial level, the more trouble the property is going to get into if it isn't already. Usually when people call me, it's down to nothing. And I'm always often surprised as to why nobody seems to connect that. So with the Japanese beetle, there are a couple of things you can do to help the tree, help the plants out, help your plants out right now. That's a short-term solution. You do need to pay attention to. You have to start feeding it better. By feeding it, I mean, okay, let me back up for a second. So if you have a tree that's having nutritional problems, getting an organic fertilizer may not exactly help. And especially if you sprinkle it on the ground, you water it in. Because remember I said you have low microbial life in this soil. Organic fertilizers rely on the microbial life to activate the fertilizer process. They in order for organic fertilizers to work, there has to be microbes in the soil. No microbes in the soil, the organic fertilizer will deteriorate and slowly decompose. Maybe some nutrients will be available, maybe not. It depends on the organic fertilizer too. So lots of organic fertilizers nowadays come with the microbial life in it. Dr. Earth's products have this microbial life. That's what makes it wonderful to use. But even then, if your soil is dead and you have organic fertilizer with the microbials, it's going to take a while for those microbials to establish themselves in the soil and become functional and do their job. Right? It does take a while for those things to come back. So you have to learn how to do foliar sprays in order to provide them the minerals they need. That's one of the things I do. I go around, spray plants and trees, give them the food right through their leaves. Remember I said you can do a Brix reading on the leaves? Well, that's part of it. Because when you spray them, they get absorbed right through their leaves, and they get the minerals, they get the bacteria, everything that they need. And that's only part of it, because then the tree themselves has to wake up and start using it. Because sometimes they get deprived of it for so long, you give them the good food, they can't process it and use it in their tree bodies. And so I suggested to the person there a couple of things that he or she could do to control the Japanese beetles. Milky spore disease is milky spores. It's called milky spore, and you can get them almost any place. My favorite place is called Arbical Organics. They also have a very good section there on Japanese beetle control. They also sell the beneficial nematodes. Nematac is what you want. There's Nematac SR and Nematac HB. You need to apply those in the spring. And usually you do a milky spore and the beneficial nematodes together. And that will tend to control their life cycle, which is what you need to do. They also come in a granular form, which will deteriorate slowly over the period of time, become more effective. There's a natural spray as a biologic control. It's called Buvera Bassana. And that would be Buvera, and it's Bassiana. It's a biological spray that you can spray on the beetles. and basically has the spores of the fungus that when you spray on the beetle, it kills them. Okay, you also use it as a soil drench. And of course, there's all standby, which is a pyrethrum-based product, and it's basically made from chrysanthemum flowers. It's called Pyganic, right? Pyganic. And that will kill them on contact. There are other things that you can use that will kill the Japanese beetles on contact if you're concerned with using any type of product that you're not familiar with. So the good old standby is called garlic, right? And the articles, for example, they happen to sell. Let me see if I have it here. Okay, they have garlic barrier. Okay, they sell the garlic barrier, which is wonderful to use. You can take the Pyganic and add it together with a little bit of the garlic barrier, and you'll be surprised at how well that would work on. And also, concerning Jim's question, because Jim was saying, Andy, it's good to hear from you again. And here where we live, we have roaches, earwigs, silverfish, and other crawling insects and cockroaches, millipedes, centipedes. He says, I have DE, and I have DE in PermaGard and 20% horticultural vinegar. I also have J. Eaton insecticidal duster. Leery of using any of this stuff. We have all kinds of bugs, cockroaches, and crawling insects. I'm going, whoa, and what do you think we should do? Probably I would move, man. I don't know. But the same goes for you is in the sense that this garlic stuff is wonderful. The biggest problem with garlic, if you spray too much, it'll smell like garlic, right? It'll smell like garlic. And the Pyganic is a non-smelling one that works really well because that's made for chrysanthemum part of chrysanthemum flowers, and that will kill most of all the insects that you mentioned on contact. Coffee is also an excellent tool to use. Cold brewed coffee, organic cold brew coffee will kill any of these bugs that we were talking about. It will also kill the Japanese beetle if you spray it on contact. It will kill the grub. The garlic will definitely kill the grub if it came on contact with it. The garlic will kill the mosquitoes. It will kill the whiteflies. I'm not sure if it'll kill the ants. It certainly will deter them. I think it might kill if you spray it on there. I know that the coffee, cold brew coffee, will kill the ants if you sprayed it on them. There are several other interesting things that neem oil will also work on a variety of different creatures, and it's safe to use. Personally, I don't use neem oil too often. Because it's kind of, I don't like the smell of it myself, and I want to be using it all the time. That's why I prefer to use the garlic barrier. A really good blend is 1 cup garlic barrier to a third cup of the Pyganic. And that mixture right there can go if you put it in 5 gallons, it's going to be too strong. So probably you should do like half a cup of the garlic barrier. And about maybe a third of the cup, a fourth of the cup of the garlic barrier, right? And you put that in 5 gallons. And that's a very good, strong mixture to use. You can change the garlic. What I do, I would do is I would reduce the amount of garlic and then try, for example, if you make this mixture, then reduce that by 50% and see if that works. If that 50% level works, I would try reducing that again. In other words, you can try to get away with what the minimum amount you can use, right? That works. And that would help you too, because if for some reason they get worse, you can always increase the strength. But if you're using it at already full strength and it doesn't work, then you may have to go on to something else. And I would stop by the Arbico folks, Arbico, ARBICO, Arbico Organics, Sal Cherie, tell them that Andy sent you. And they have a lot of really good products over there that you can take a look at, from the mosquito control. They have all kinds of beneficial insects. Beneficials are one of the best ways to control a wide variety of bugs. But it comes back down to what I was talking about in terms of the soil. And I have found from my experience that I can control all kinds of bugs simply by having a healthy, biologically active soil. And not just bugs, but here's an example too. I started working on a farm here in Malibu. Okay, so the soil here is not exactly what you would call soil, because it's not a very humus soil, it's not fertile loam, it's more like hard clay. It's like a desert environment. So one of the things with the fires, we recently had the fires, and it burns a lot of things down. And one of the things is that this environment is perfect for fires. So what you have to do is you have to have plant a ground cover on it. My idea is to make it into a more sustainable environment where you don't have to be watering all the time, where you don't have massive amounts of gophers or massive amounts of ants. And the water, when it rains, the water just runs away because it doesn't soak into the ground. So what we want to do is we want to start planting native ground covers into the ground. And there are many different ways to do a really wonderful ground cover environment, so that after, throughout the year, the earth is returning nutrients back. And so we're going to get cattle running around. There's horses now already. So they have a composting problem because they don't know how to make compost. So compost goes out the wrong way, in terms of being shipped away because they can't. They were making it and the neighbors were saying they don't want to smell and all that kind of stuff. So what we're going to do is we're going to process the compost on the land. We're going to add it to the land, turn it over a little bit, plant a cover crop. Go through the whole property that way. And encourage it to grow, the cover crop to grow. And we have goats running around. And by doing that, they have a healthier soil, which in turn will have healthier, there's fruit trees on there, for example, they're not doing very well. And they have to get watered a lot. The same thing happens with almost any place that I've been going to lately. The rains was good, but it's all gone now. Nothing there. So it's important that by doing the ground cover, encouraging the soil to come back, that then the fruit trees and your trees that are growing in there will do better. I'll give you another example. In this farm that I'm working at, they have oak trees. They just planted about 10 oak trees. Okay, so they were planted wrong. They were planted in a well. Okay. I never heard of oak trees being planted in a well before, but that's what happened. So with all the rains, the water collected at the base of the oak trees in the well and basically pretty much destroyed the biological activity of the soil, because remember, microbes don't swim too well. So what happens is that then they planted the oak tree, they have the oak trees planted in there, and sure enough, a few of them are dying. The ones that weren't dying, the drainage, they weren't entirely in the well, but part of the well either had caved in or they didn't have a side of the water drained out the other side. Some of them are on higher levels than the other ones, so everything drained down to the lower ones. And so they're going through a trace mineral deficiency. They're getting attacked by a white fungus that eventually will cover the whole tree and deprive it of the photosynthesis. Now, it's just like Sudimote does. Sudimote covers the leaves of the tree and reduces the tree's ability to synthesize the sun into the energy it needs, the sugars that it needs. So what I've started to do is twofold, right? One is you have to attend to the immediate problem. How do you control? What do you have to do to get rid of that fungus on it right now? So I start spraying with it, and when I spray, I don't mean chemicals, but everything's a chemical. So essentially, I made a compost tea made out of the super seaweed. I started using a C90, which is a trace mineral product that has over 90 different trace minerals. My super seaweed has a wide range of trace minerals in it as well. And so I was using that, and then that alone right there will help the tree, because you spray it through the leaves and you spray it onto the fungus, It takes a little bit of time for it to start to absorb and use by the tree. The microbial effect of fungus will reduce its growth and eventually stop it from growing. But at the same time, got to pay attention to the health of the soil, because if you ignore the soil, the problems will not go away. So I've already started to treat the soil with a special mixture that I make, which is basically a compost that has to have trace minerals. I mean rock dust added to it. It also has various different microbial life added to it. I use a Dr. Earth organic fertilizers. I use a Dr. Earth soil amendment, which has a wide range of mycorrhizae in there, along with an assortment of other sources of nutrients. The same thing with the organic fertilizer. I also use, I don't have the little container, but basically there are several different types of microbial products on the market. Let's see, where is that one? Oh, yeah, there it is. Hang on a second. I got it right over here. Hang on. Here we go. Here we go. Hang on, boy. I'm moving over here to get it. Yes, sir. Oh, yeah. Oh, I can move. Oh. Okay, so where was I? Oh, yeah. Well, here's one that I just used up as empty, okay? So it's a premium mycorrhizal inoculant. It has trichondrioma, which is a form of microbe, and beneficial bacteria. And these are some of the different types of mycorrhizae. So it's got mycorrhizae, it has endo and ectomycorrhizae. There are two different types of mycorrhizae. Okay, and in the endomycorrhizae, it has 1, 2, 3. It has a whole bunch, like 10 different types of mycorrhizae, of endomycorrhizae. And this, and the ectomycorrhizae, again, it has another 10 different types of ectomycorrhizae, all very interesting names. And it also has a variety of different Bacillus thuringiensis, Bacillus subtilis, I mean, enormous amounts. So we have over 40 different types of microbial life in this one product alone. Eh? And I use this up about, it says 1 tablespoon per gallon, so I have 100 gallons of water that I use, so you can see I'll go through it. But a lot of times I learn from experience, and rather than using it by itself, I put it and blend it in with a variety of other microbial products that I have. And over the years, I will be telling you what they all are. I don't have any secrets, so I bring the label in. If I have the label with me, I can then talk to you about the label, you know, tell you what the product, name of the product. This one's called Plant Success. And I think it says, because what I'm doing is I go online, is Plant. So the website is Plant, www.plant-success.com. Plant-success.com. Dash is that little line floating in the middle there, right? Plantsuccess.com. And it's an excellent product to use. Like I said, I have a bunch of different ones that I've been using over the years. And so I'm happy to tell you what I'm getting ready to do another order really soon. Several times a year, I put in an order for all the materials I buy. So one of the sources I get is Down to Earth. I think it's downtoearth.com. I get the rock dust from them. I get a wide range of the microbial stuff, the soft rock phosphate. I get lots of different types of seaweeds. So it's a really excellent source to get things. I also get things from Peaceful Valley Farm and Garden Supply. I've been getting from them for a long time. I get things from the Nitron company called Nitron 835. What is that? I think there's a spaceship just came by. Just took me away, yeah. And I also get AgriGrow. These are different types of beneficial bacteria, and I'll go over them again with you throughout the years that I'm using it, and let you know what they are, what I use them for, and of course I'll give you a contact. A place where you can get them yourself and then start using and learning. These are all excellent tools that you put together that helps, encourages the soil to come back to life. And one of the things for sources And you know, if you're not, that you should be getting is called Acres USA. Acres USA is a magazine that when I started, they were already doing their thing, and that was way back in the 70s. And so it's called Acres USA. I think it's acresusa.com. These are good old boy farmers. They've been doing this for a long time, and they have down to how to heal the soil, a different wonderful product. It's a great source of products. They have tons and tons of products, available products there that I tend to buy myself from them, different companies. There are different rock dust companies that sell products there, different microbial life products that sell, companies that sell there. Lately, I've been noticing a whole bunch of compost tea companies selling different types of equipment that you can buy to make your own compost tea. And that's really good that people are learning how to make compost tea, because that's one of the main tools that you want to learn how to use in terms of controlling bugs and pests. Again, the key to controlling bugs and pests is long-term solutions, sustainable solutions. It's doing something to the land that will sustain itself. It gets better and better, and the bugs won't have a chance. They will go but through evolution, they have to do a certain way. They're not going to. And one of the things I tell people and that they need to understand is why the bugs don't eat healthy plants. Okay, and I explained about the minerals, but I didn't get to the point of what it really does, how it physically affects the insects. And one of the things I learned is that it's called carbohydrates. Now, carbohydrates, there's two types of carbohydrates, simple and complex. And it turns out that the simple carbohydrates is food for the insects. That's where they get a lot of their energy, almost all their energy from. So simple carbohydrates, right, they love. Complex carbohydrates, they cannot process. So guess what a healthy tree or plant, even a human, has? What type of carbohydrates it has? Guess, make a guess. Right? So they can't digest the complex carbohydrates. So over the years, right, they've learned how to determine if that tree is a complex carbohydrate or a simple carbohydrate. Because I would eat it if it's simple. Complex, I'm leaving it alone, because I'll die if I give it to my kid to eat. He'll die too. So it's to my advantage to know if that tree is going to be complex or simple carbohydrates. As simple as that. So, yeah, the singles are there, and you know it's no coincidence that trace minerals mean certain colors are present, and it's all the range of colors. Where if you need all the trace minerals, 90 trace minerals, 90. Range of colors, because each have their own color. And the refractometer breaks it down, so does the lenses in the insect. And they don't have to see all 90, they just have to see that what particular one range that they are interested in. And if that's missing, or that color is there, or that lack of the color is there, then that triggers them saying, that's what I want. See, it's really, really very simple. And so in the long run, you're much, much better off, including our bodies, to be providing all the trace minerals. It's all about trace minerals. That's why, and you know, more interesting too is, okay, so what does the trace minerals do to you? One of the things, see, there's several things that happens here with the trace minerals. One, of course, your body uses it, right, in the building function of your body, whether it be your heart, your lung, your kidney, bones, whatever, right? Same thing with the trees or the plants. They use the trace minerals to produce certain other parts of their bodies. But here's the interesting thing that I have learned myself over time is that, okay, so there are different colors for different minerals, different elements, right? Different colors. Each color also has to do with a certain frequency. It vibrates at a certain frequency. And so that frequency, interestingly enough, is found in lots of different places. And one of the things that's really interesting about all of this is that one of the shows I do is called Cosmic Gardening, which I try to explain to people what it is that we are really eating. What is it that we are really getting into our body that what's the purpose of our body other than saying, well, we can, you know, our purpose is to live here and to love and to and you have a wonderful life and then we're gone. Okay, so the universe, you know, we're on Earth, right, on a planet, right? Okay. And the planet's in a solar system, and the solar system is in a galaxy, right? We're all traveling through space. In essence, what we're doing is we're traveling through this type of energy. Now, there are different types of energy, of course, but the one I'm talking about is called cosmic rays. Okay, a cosmic ray travels at the beyond the speed of light. And when it goes into the Earth and comes out of the Earth, it's in a nanosecond. And what happens is that in this process of going through the Earth, that energy is absorbed. Okay, that particular energy, cosmic energy, if you want to call it, is absorbed by different types of trace minerals. Different trace minerals will absorb different frequencies. There's also a correlation between all what they absorb. You know, iron will absorb certain frequency as opposed to copper. And the bottom line is when we eat that, we're absorbing those frequencies. See, that's the bottom line. Whether it goes through with different forms, whether it gets eaten by, you know, so it depends on usually the way it works, the way systems seem to have been set up is that, and give you an example of the trees. What are trees? They're big, giant antennas. They're grounded into the earth, and boom, they have an antenna system. Okay, so yeah, you think, okay, they get into the light. Okay, yeah, light is one source of energy. And so when a cosmic ray shoots through that tree absorbs a certain type of that energy. If it has the proper trace minerals, if it has the proper tools to absorb that. If it doesn't, it's going to go through. It ain't going to get that. And if it doesn't get that energy, sooner or later it'll die, because that's what it needs. It needs that energy. It's like human beings. Did you know that a cosmic ray will shoot through your body? Yeah. So if it goes through the Earth in a nanosecond, imagine how fast it goes through your body. And, you know, today there are lots of interesting things happening. But another interesting thing is that, did you know that a cosmic ray will, every once in a while, split your DNA, will hit your DNA and cause a mutation, if you want to call it that. And not just people DNA, animals, birds, flowers, bees, whatever. It's one of the evolutionary ways of changing the evolution of that being. And it does happen. And it could be a very simple change, like intelligence, right? It could be a very simple way in terms of being faster, being more stronger, you know, than your brothers, or it could be other ways. If the mutation is too radical, you die because you can't function. But a lot of the mutations are hidden; you don't see them until later on in centuries of your children, right? Before that mutation takes effect, becomes visible. Usually it's a hidden mutation inside of us. It changes our consciousness. Same thing with the animals, same thing with birds. And it also can explain a lot of these evolutionary changes that's been going on throughout the centuries. You know, how we have changed. That also can explain human race, how it has evolved and changed. Why caused that jump, that missing link jump. Anyways, I don't want to get carried away. So coming up after the so basically, I give you a little quick class on cosmic energies. I give you but what I gave you was the most important thing that I've learned over my, I'm 70 years old. You say, what is the most important thing that you have learned in your whole life? Of course, I have different categories of those things, you know. But in terms of this thing right here, in terms of the gardening experience, in terms of horticultural, in terms of dealing with the earth, making things grow, helping them to be healthy, how to deal with pests and bugs and seeds. In terms of that, the one most important thing that I've learned is, and I forgot what it is already, I'm not going to tell you. No, it's that simple carbohydrates and complex carbohydrates. That right there makes a big difference in how bugs and creatures and diseases, everything happens. So if you tell yourself, well, if simple carbohydrates are food for the insects, you know, insects are usually vectors for disease, and that has the same thing with evolution. Insects and diseases. A disease has evolved to attach itself to certain insects, saying, okay, that bug is going to go after that plant. I want to end up in that plant, so I'm going to follow this bug. I'm going to figure out a way to attach myself to this creature here who's going to end up over there anyway. That's where I want to go. I can't get away by myself, but you'll take me. You see what I'm saying? And that didn't just happen like overnight either. Okay? So simple carbohydrates, complex carbohydrates, that's the key to controlling. And then and the real way to get the simple carbohydrates, and the real way to understand the a real way to understand, you know, the pest control and disease control is to do exactly that. Make sure that they get all the trace minerals that they need, right? And the only way you're going to do the long-term solution is to heal the soil. That means you have to learn how to use compost, properly made compost, right? We'll have all the trace minerals in it. That's the reason why we make compost. We make compost to provide it to the soil the trace minerals that we need. You know, that's called soil depletion. If you take it out from the soil, don't put it back in. So this is how you put it back in. Best way to put it back in, rich, hot, live compost, right? With all the microbes and all the trace minerals. And that's why rock dust is so important. And you'll find that there are different sources of rock dust around the world. I get about 14 different types of rock dust because I want to get all the trace minerals. I want to get the exotic trace minerals in there. That's why I use C90, exotic trace minerals. You know, everybody's using calcium and copper and the magnesium and iron. But how many of them are dealing with any exotic ones? You need them. And even though ones that sound like they're toxic, cadmium, mercury, lead, those are exotic trace minerals that are needed, and parts per billion for that matter. They're still needed. Gold, still needed. So anyway, I think we're doing okay. I can't tell what's going on. I think we have another minute or two. So next month would be July. And so then when my show will be coming on, be right after the 4th of July holiday, right? So you guys will be partying. And then I probably not really sure what type, what I'm going to be talking about. I kind of like it if you just start sending me, you send me these questions, that's what I will talk about. So the more questions I have to answer, the more I will be talking about. Otherwise, I will be doing my thing. I'll probably be talking about roses. I'll be covering more natural lawn, for example, how to have a healthy natural lawn. And I also will be covering some vegetables. I talk a lot about tomatoes. I can grow anything, and I can help you with any type of problem that you have. I tell people I don't do marital problems. That's true. I don't do marital problems, but I have saved many of families, you know, because the good old boy wants to kill the bug, and the wife says, use this, and he doesn't care as long as he killed it. Okay, we're out of here, folks. See you next week. Coming up next is my cosmic spaceship.